Primal Leadership, Realizing the Power of Emotional Intelligence, by Daniel Goleman, Richard Boyatzis, and Annie McKee. Read by Barrett Whitener. Preface. We've written Primal Leadership in large part because of the unprecedented, enormously enthusiastic reader response to the Harvard Business Review articles, What Makes a Leader and Leadership That Gets Results. But this program goes far beyond those articles to advance a new concept, primal leadership. The fundamental task of leaders, we argue, is to prime good feeling in those they lead. That occurs when a leader creates resonance, a reservoir of positivity that frees the best in people. At its root, then, the primal job of leadership is emotional. We believe this primal dimension of leadership, though often invisible or ignored entirely, determines whether everything else a leader does will work as well as it could. And this is why emotional intelligence, being intelligent about emotions, matters so much for leadership success. Primal leadership demands we bring emotional intelligence to bear. In this program, we show not just why emotionally intelligent leadership drives resonance and thus performance, but also how to realize its power for the individual leader, in teams, and throughout entire organizations. Perhaps uniquely among management theories, the primal leadership model builds on links to neurology. Breakthroughs in brain research show why leaders' moods and actions have enormous impact on those they lead, and shed fresh light on the power of emotionally intelligent leadership to inspire, arouse passion and enthusiasm, and keep people motivated and committed. Conversely, we sound a warning about the power of toxic leadership to poison the emotional climate of a workplace. Each of us brings a different perspective to this task. For Daniel Goleman, the worldwide response to his books and his Harvard Business Review articles on leadership has brought invitations to speak with leaders around the world. In addition to his own worldwide speaking, Richard Boyatzis, as a professor at the Weatherhead School of Management, has the advantage of in-depth research from 15 years of guiding thousands of MBAs and executives through the challenge of cultivating the essential competencies of emotionally intelligent, or EI, leadership. And Anne McKee, on the faculty of the University of Pennsylvania Graduate School of Education, consults to business and organization leaders worldwide and brings practical insights gained from her hands-on work helping dozens of organizations transform to foster emotionally intelligent leaders. We have woven our collective expertise together to offer a perspective that takes advantage of our diverse backgrounds. EI versus IQ, a technical note. In recent years, we have analyzed data from close to 500 competence models from global companies, including the likes of IBM, Lucent, PepsiCo, British Airways, and Credit Suisse First Boston, as well as from healthcare organizations, academic institutions, government agencies, and even a religious order. To determine which personal capabilities drove outstanding performance within these organizations, we grouped capabilities into three categories: purely technical skills, such as accounting or business planning, cognitive abilities, such as analytic reasoning, and traits showing emotional intelligence, such as self-awareness and relationship skill. To create some of the competency models, psychologists typically asked senior managers at the companies to identify the competencies that distinguished the organization's most outstanding leaders, seeking consensus from an expert panel. Others used a more rigorous method, in which analysts asked senior managers to use objective criteria, such as a division's profitability, to distinguish the star performers at senior levels within their organizations from the average ones. Those individuals were then extensively interviewed and tested, and their competencies were methodically compared to identify those that distinguished star performers. Whichever method was used, this process resulted in lists of ingredients for highly effective leaders. The lists usually ranged in length from a handful to up to 15 or so competencies, such as initiative, collaboration, and empathy. Analyzing all the data from hundreds of competence models yielded dramatic results. To be sure, intellect was to some extent a driver of outstanding performance. Cognitive skills such as big-picture thinking and long-term vision were particularly important. But calculating the ratio of technical skills and purely cognitive abilities, some of which are surrogates for aspects of intelligence quotient or IQ, to emotional intelligence in the ingredients that distinguished outstanding leaders, revealed that EI-based competencies played an increasingly important role at higher levels of organizations, where differences in technical skills are of negligible importance. In other words, the higher the rank of those considered star performers, the more EI competencies emerged as the reason for their effectiveness. When the comparison matched star performers against average ones in senior leadership positions, about 85% of the difference in their profiles was attributable to emotional intelligence factors rather than to purely cognitive abilities like technical expertise. One reason has to do with the intellectual hurdles that senior executives jump in obtaining their jobs. It takes at least an IQ of about 110 to 120 to get an advanced degree such as an MBA. There is thus a high selection pressure for IQ in order to enter the executive ranks, and relatively little variation in IQ among those who are in the ranks. On the other hand, there is little or no systematic selection pressure when it comes to emotional intelligence, and so there is a much wider range of variation among executives. That lets superiority in these capabilities count far more than IQ when it comes to star leadership performance. While the precise ratio of EI to cognitive abilities depends on how each are measured and on the unique demands of a given organization, our rule of thumb holds that EI contributes 80 to 90% of the competencies that distinguish outstanding from average leaders, and sometimes more. To be sure, purely cognitive competencies, such as technical expertise, surface in such studies, but often as threshold abilities, the skills people need simply to do an average job. Although the specifics vary from organization to organization, EI competencies make up the vast majority of the more crucial distinguishing competencies. Even so, when those specific competencies are weighted for their contribution, the cognitive competencies can sometimes have quite significant input too, depending on the specific competence model involved. To get an idea of the practical business implications of these competencies, consider an analysis of the partner's contributions to the profits of a large accounting firm. If the partner had significant strengths in the self-management competencies, he or she added 78% more incremental profit than did partners without those strengths. Likewise, the added profits for partners with strengths in social skills were 110% greater, and those with strengths in the self-management competencies added a whopping 390% incremental profit. In this case, $1,465,000 more per year. By contrast, significant strengths in analytic reasoning abilities added just 50% more profit. Thus, purely cognitive abilities help, but the EI competencies help far more. Just what the many faces of primal leadership look like has become evident to us as we've talked with hundreds of executives, managers, and workers at companies and organizations around the world. We have encountered resonant leaders in organizations of every sort and at all levels. Some have no official leadership position, yet step forward to lead as needed, then fade back until another ripe moment arrives. Others head a team or an entire company, guide a startup, catalyze change in their organization, or nimbly split away to start their own renegade venture. We'll share stories of many such leaders in these pages, some of whom we name, while others who spoke to us in confidence we have disguised. And we've confirmed these personal observations with data on thousands of leaders. We've been able to reap a rich harvest of data from other sources. Colleagues at the research arm of the Hay Group have shared with us 2 decades of analyses of leadership effectiveness done for their clients globally. In recent years, an expanding network of academic researchers has been gathering data with the ECI 360, our measure of the key emotional intelligence competencies for leadership. And from many other centers of research, the body of findings and theory on emotional intelligence in leadership has been growing steadily. From all these sources, we've drawn answers to telling questions about primal leadership. What emotional resources do leaders need to thrive amidst chaos and turbulent change? What gives a leader the inner strength to be honest about even painful truths? What enables a leader to inspire others to do their best work and to stay loyal when other jobs beckon? How do leaders create an emotional climate that fosters creative innovations, all-out performance, or warm and lasting customer relationships? For too long, managers have seen emotions at work as noise cluttering the rational operation of organizations. But the time for ignoring emotions as irrelevant to business has passed. What organizations everywhere need now is to realize the benefits of primal leadership by cultivating leaders who generate the emotional resonance that lets people flourish. Take, for example, the horrific catastrophe in New York, Washington, D.C., and Pennsylvania on September 11, 2001, which occurred in the final days of writing this program. That calamity underscores the essential role of emotional leadership, particularly in moments of human tragedy and crisis. And it brings home the point that resonance goes beyond positivity to cover the range of emotions. Consider Mark Lehr, CEO of Soundview Technology, a technology brokerage in Connecticut. A handful of friends, colleagues, and family members of people there were lost in the tragedy. Lehr's first response was to invite all employees to come to the office the next day, not to work, but to share their feelings and talk over what to do. Over the following days, Lehr was there as people wept together, and he urged people to talk about what they were going through. Every night at 9:45, he sent out an email to the entire company about the personal side of the ongoing events. Lehr went a step further, encouraging and guiding a discussion of how to find meaning in the chaos through an action they could all participate in to help out. Rather than just making a group donation, they decided to donate their company's proceeds from one day of trading to those victimized by the tragedy. On an average day, that might be more than $500,000. The most they had made in a day was around $1 million. But as they spread the word of what they wanted to do to their clients, it inspired an amazing response. They raised more than $6 million that day. To continue the healing process, Lehr also asked employees to compile a memory book to record their thoughts, fears, and hopes, which could be shared with future generations. There was an outpouring of emails with poems, moving stories, reflections, people speaking from their hearts. In such a grave crisis, all eyes turned to the leader for emotional guidance. Because the leader's way of seeing things has special weight, leaders manage meaning for a group, offering a way to interpret or make sense of, and so react emotionally to, a given situation. Mark Lehr courageously performed one of the most crucial emotional tasks of leadership. He helped himself and his people find meaning and sense, even in the face of chaos and madness. To do so, he first attuned to and expressed the shared emotional reality, so that the direction he eventually articulated resonated at the gut level, putting into words what everyone was feeling in their hearts. What would our lives look like if the organizations where we spent our working days were naturally places of resonance with leaders who inspired us? In most parts of the developing world, best practices for business have not yet formed. Imagine what an organization would be like if these concepts of resonant leadership were founding principles rather than, as is usually the case in highly developed settings, a corrective. Then, from the start, hiring would focus on recruiting those with the EI skills for leadership, as would promotions and development. Ongoing learning for these leadership skills would be part of everyday operations, and the entire organization would be a place where people flourished by working together. And then what if we brought these qualities home to our marriages, families, children, and communities? Very often, when we work with leaders to help them cultivate a greater range or depth in emotional intelligence competencies, they tell us that the payoff for them has been not just in their work as leaders, but in their personal and family lives as well. They find themselves bringing home heightened levels of self-awareness and empathic understanding, self-mastery, and attuned relationships. Let's take that a step further. What would our schools and children be like if education also included those emotional intelligence abilities that foster resonance? For one thing, employers of every kind would have the pleasure of taking into their ranks new generations of leaders-to-be who were already adept at these key work skills. The personal benefits for young people themselves would also be reflected in a decline in those social ills, ranging from violence to substance abuse, that stem in large part from deficits in skills such as handling impulses and rocky emotions. Beyond that, communities would benefit from higher levels of tolerance, caring, and personal responsibility. Given that employers themselves are looking for these capacities in those they hire, colleges and professional schools, particularly business schools, should be including the basics of emotional intelligence in the skill sets they offer. As Erasmus, the great Renaissance thinker, reminds us, "The best hope of a nation lies in the proper education of its youth." The most innovative business educators will, we hope, recognize the importance of emotional intelligence in higher education for helping their graduates become leaders instead of mere managers. The most forward-thinking business people will encourage and support such business education, not just for added leadership strength in their own organizations, but for the vitality of an entire economy. And the benefits will accrue not just for a new generation of leaders, but for our families, communities, and society as a whole. One final note. There are many leaders, not just one. Leadership is distributed. It resides not solely in the individual at the top, but in every person at every level who, in one way or another, acts as a leader to a group of followers, wherever in the organization that person is, whether shop steward, team head, or CEO. We offer these insights to leaders, wherever they may be. Part 1, The Power of Emotional Intelligence. Chapter 1, Primal Leadership. Great leaders move us. They ignite our passion and inspire the best in us. When we try to explain why they are so effective, we speak of strategy, vision, or powerful ideas. But the reality is much more primal. Great leadership works through the emotions. No matter what leaders set out to do, whether it's creating strategy or mobilizing teams to action, their success depends on how they do it. Even if they get everything else just right, if leaders fail in this primal task of driving emotions in the right direction, nothing they do will work as well as it could or should. Consider, for example, a pivotal moment in a news division at the BBC, the British media giant. The division had been set up as an experiment, and while its 200 or so journalists and editors felt they had given their best, management had decided the division would have to close. It didn't help that the executive sent to deliver the decision to the assembled staff started off with a glowing account of how well rival operations were doing, and that he had just returned from a wonderful trip to Cannes. The news itself was bad enough, but the brusque, even contentious manner of the executive incited something beyond the expected frustration. People became enraged, not just at the management decision, but also at the bearer of the news himself. The atmosphere became so threatening, in fact, that it looked as though the executive might have to call security to usher him safely from the room. The next day, another executive visited the same staff. He took a very different approach. He spoke from his heart about the crucial importance of journalism to the vibrancy of a society, and of the calling that had drawn them all to the field in the first place. He reminded them that no one goes into journalism to get rich. As a profession, its finances have always been marginal, with job security ebbing and flowing with larger economic tides. And he invoked the passion, even the dedication, the journalists had for the service they offered. Finally, he wished them all well in getting on with their careers. When this leader finished speaking, the staff cheered. The difference between the leaders lay in the mood and tone with which they delivered their messages. One drove the group toward antagonism and hostility, the other toward optimism, even inspiration, in the face of difficulty. These two moments point to a hidden but crucial dimension in leadership, the emotional impact of what a leader says and does. While most people recognize that a leader's mood, and how he or she impacts the mood of others, plays a significant role in any organization, emotions are often seen as too personal or unquantifiable to talk about in a meaningful way. But research in the field of emotion has yielded keen insights into not only how to measure the impact of a leader's emotions, but also how the best leaders have found effective ways to understand and improve the way they handle their own and other people's emotions. Understanding the powerful role of emotions in the workplace sets the best leaders apart from the rest, not just in tangibles such as better business results and the retention of talent, but also in the all-important intangibles such as higher morale, motivation, and commitment. The primal dimension. This emotional task of the leader is primal, that is, first, in two senses. It is both the original and the most important act of leadership. Leaders have always played a primordial emotional role. No doubt humankind's original leaders, whether tribal chieftains or shamanesses, earned their place in large part because their leadership was emotionally compelling. Throughout history and in cultures everywhere, the leader in any human group has been the one to whom others look for assurance and clarity when facing uncertainty or threat, or when there's a job to be done. The leader acts as the group's emotional guide. In the modern organization, this primordial emotional task, though by now largely invisible, remains foremost among the many jobs of leadership, driving the collective emotions in a positive direction and clearing the smog created by toxic emotions. This task applies to leadership everywhere, from the boardroom to the shop floor. Quite simply, in any human group, the leader has maximal power to sway everyone's emotions. If people's emotions are pushed toward the range of enthusiasm, performance can soar. If people are driven toward rancor and anxiety, they will be thrown off stride. This indicates another important aspect of primal leadership. Its effects extend beyond ensuring that a job is well done. Followers also look to a leader for supportive emotional connection, for empathy. All leadership includes this primal dimension, for better or for worse. When leaders drive emotions positively, as was the case with the second executive at the BBC, they bring out everyone's best. We call this effect resonance. When they drive emotions negatively, as with the first executive, leaders spawn dissonance, undermining the emotional foundations that let people shine. Whether an organization withers or flourishes depends to a remarkable extent on the leader's effectiveness in this primal emotional dimension. The key, of course, to making primal leadership work to everyone's advantage lies in the leadership competencies of emotional intelligence, how leaders handle themselves and their relationships. Leaders who maximize the benefits of primal leadership drive the emotions of those they lead in the right direction. How does all of this work? Recent studies of the brain reveal the neurological mechanisms of primal leadership and make clear just why emotional intelligence abilities are so crucial. The open loop. The reason a leader's manner, not just what he does, but how he does it, matters so much lies in the design of the human brain, what scientists have begun to call the open-loop nature of the limbic system, our emotional centers. A closed-loop system, such as the circulatory system, is self-regulating. What's happening in the circulatory system of others around us does not impact our own system. An open-loop system depends largely on external sources to manage itself. In other words, we rely on connections with other people for our own emotional stability. The open-loop limbic system was a winning design in evolution, no doubt, because it allows people to come to one another's emotional rescue, enabling, for example, a mother to soothe her crying infant, or a lookout in a primate band to signal an instant alarm when he perceives a threat. Despite the veneer of our advanced civilization, the open-loop principle still holds. Research in intensive care units has shown that the comforting presence of another person not only lowers the patient's blood pressure, but also slows the secretion of fatty acids that block arteries. More dramatically, whereas three or more incidents of intense stress within a year, say serious financial trouble, being fired, or a divorce, triple the death rate in socially isolated middle-aged men, they have no impact whatsoever on the death rate of men who cultivate many close relationships. Scientists describe the open loop as interpersonal limbic regulation, whereby one person transmits signals that can alter hormone levels, cardiovascular function, sleep rhythms, and even immune function inside the body of another. That's how couples who are in love are able to trigger in one another's brains surges of oxytocin, which creates a pleasant, affectionate feeling. But in all aspects of social life, not just love relationships, our physiologies intermingle, our emotions automatically shifting into the register of the person we're with. The open-loop design of the limbic system means that other people can change our very physiology, and so our emotions. Even though the open loop is so much a part of our lives, we usually don't notice the process itself. Scientists have captured this attunement of emotions in the laboratory by measuring the physiology, such as heart rate, of two people as they have a good conversation. As the conversation begins, their bodies each operate at different rhythms. But by the end of a simple 15-minute conversation, their physiological profiles look remarkably similar, a phenomenon called mirroring. This entrainment occurs strongly during the downward spiral of a conflict when anger and hurt reverberate, but also goes on more subtly during pleasant interactions. It happens hardly at all during an emotionally neutral discussion. Researchers have seen again and again how emotions spread irresistibly in this way whenever people are near one another, even when the contact is completely nonverbal. For example, when three strangers sit facing each other in silence for a minute or two, the one who is most emotionally expressive transmits his or her mood to the other two without speaking a single word. The same effect holds in the office, boardroom, or shop floor. People in groups at work inevitably catch feelings from one another, sharing everything from jealousy and envy to angst or euphoria. The more cohesive the group, the stronger the sharing of moods, emotional history, and even hot buttons. In 70 work teams across diverse industries, for instance, members who sat in meetings together ended up sharing moods, either good or bad, within 2 hours. Nurses and even accountants who monitored their moods over weeks or every few hours as they worked together showed emotions that tracked together, and the group's shared moods were largely independent of the hassles they shared. Studies of professional sports teams reveal similar results. Quite apart from the ups and downs of a team's standing, its players tend to synchronize their moods over a period of days and weeks. Laughter and the open loop. Emotions may spread like viruses, but not all emotions spread with the same ease. A study at the Yale University School of Management found that among working groups, cheerfulness and warmth spread most easily, while irritability is less contagious and depression spreads hardly at all. this greater diffusion rate for good moods has direct implications for business results. Moods, the Yale study found, influence how effectively people work. Upbeat moods boost cooperation, fairness, and business performance. Laughter, in particular, demonstrates the power of the open loop in operation, and therefore the contagious nature of all emotion. Hearing laughter, we automatically smile or laugh too, creating a spontaneous chain reaction that sweeps through a group. Glee spreads so readily because our brain includes open-loop circuits designed specifically for detecting smiles and laughter that make us laugh in response. The result is a positive emotional hijack. Similarly, of all emotional signals, smiles are the most contagious. They have an almost irresistible power to make others smile in return. Smiles may be so potent because of the beneficial role they played in evolution. Smiles and laughter, scientists speculate, evolved as a nonverbal way to cement alliances, signifying that an individual is relaxed and friendly rather than guarded or hostile. Laughter offers a uniquely trustworthy sign of this friendliness. Unlike other emotional signals, especially a smile, which can be feigned, laughter involves highly complex neural systems that are largely involuntary. It's harder to fake. So whereas a false smile might easily slip through our emotional radar, a forced laugh has a hollow ring. In a neurological sense, laughing represents the shortest distance between two people because it instantly interlocks limbic systems. This immediate involuntary reaction, as one researcher puts it, involves the most direct communication possible between people, brain to brain, with our intellect just going along for the ride, in what might be called a limbic lock. Unquote. No surprise, then, that people who relish each other's company laugh easily and often. Those who distrust or dislike each other, or who are otherwise at odds, laugh little together, if at all. In any work setting, therefore, the sound of laughter signals the group's emotional temperature, offering one sure sign that people's hearts as well as their minds are engaged. Moreover, laughter at work has little to do with someone telling a canned joke. In a study of 1,200 episodes of laughter during social interactions, the laugh almost always came as a friendly response to some ordinary remark like, "Nice meeting you," not to a punchline. A good laugh sends a reassuring message. We're on the same wavelength. We get along. It signals trust, comfort, and a shared sense of the world. As a rhythm in a conversation, laughing signals that all is well for the moment. Contagion and leadership. The continual interplay of limbic open loops among members of a group creates a kind of emotional soup, with everyone adding his or her own flavor to the mix. But it is the leader who adds the strongest seasoning. Why? Because of that enduring reality of business. Everyone watches the boss. People take their emotional cues from the top. Even when the boss isn't highly visible, for example, the CEO who works behind closed doors on an upper floor, his attitude affects the moods of his direct reports, and a domino effect ripples throughout the company's emotional climate. Careful observations of working groups in action revealed several ways the leader plays such a pivotal role in determining the shared emotions. Leaders typically talked more than anyone else, and what they said was listened to more carefully. Leaders were also usually the first to speak out on a subject, and when others made comments, their remarks most often referred to what the leader had said than to anyone else's comments. Because the leader's way of seeing things has special weight, leaders manage meaning for a group, offering a way to interpret and so react emotionally to a given situation. But the impact on emotions goes beyond what a leader says. In these studies, even when leaders were not talking, they were watched more carefully than anyone else in the group. When people raised a question for the group as a whole, they would keep their eyes on the leader to see his or her response. Indeed, group members generally see the leader's emotional reaction as the most valid response, and so model their own on it, particularly in an ambiguous situation where various members react differently. In a sense, the leader sets the emotional standard. Leaders give praise or withhold it, criticize well or destructively, offer support or turn a blind eye to people's needs. They can frame the group's mission in ways that give more meaning to each person's contribution or not. They can guide in ways that give people a sense of clarity and direction in their work and that encourage flexibility, setting people free to use their best sense of how to get the job done. All these acts help determine a leader's primal emotional impact. Still, not all official leaders in a group are necessarily the emotional leaders. When the designated leader lacks credibility for some reason, people may turn for emotional guidance to someone else who they trust and respect. This de facto leader then becomes the one who molds others' emotional reactions. For instance, a well-known jazz group that was named for its formal leader and founder actually took its emotional cues from a different musician. The founder continued to manage bookings and logistics, but when it came time to decide what tune the group would play next or how the sound system should be adjusted, all eyes turned to the dominant member, the emotional leader. People magnets. Regardless of who the emotional leader might be, however, she's likely to have a knack for acting as a limbic attractor, exerting a palpable force on the emotional brains of people around her. Watch a gifted actor at work, for example, and observe how easily she draws an audience into her emotional orbit. Whether she's conveying the agony of a betrayal or a joyous triumph, the audience feels those things too. How easily we catch leaders' emotional states, then, has to do with how expressively their faces, voices, and gestures convey their feelings. The greater a leader's skill at transmitting emotions, the more forcefully the emotions will spread. Such transmission does not depend on theatrics, of course. Since people pay close attention to a leader, even subtle expressions of emotion can have great impact. Even so, the more open leaders are, how well they express their own enthusiasm, for example, the more readily others will feel that same contagious passion. Leaders with that kind of talent are emotional magnets. People naturally gravitate to them. If you think about the leaders with whom people most want to work in an organization, they probably have this ability to exude upbeat feelings. It's one reason emotionally intelligent leaders attract talented people, for the pleasure of working in their presence. Conversely, leaders who emit the negative register, who are irritable, touchy, domineering, cold, repel people. No one wants to work for a grouch. Research has proven it. Optimistic, enthusiastic leaders more easily retain their people compared with those bosses who tend toward negative moods. Let's now take the impact of primal leadership one step further to examine just how much emotions determine job effectiveness. How moods impact results. Emotions are highly intense, fleeting, and sometimes disruptive to work. Moods tend to be less intense, longer-lasting feelings that typically don't interfere with the job at hand. And an emotional episode usually leaves a corresponding lingering mood, a low-key, continual flow of feeling throughout the group. Although emotions and moods may seem trivial from a business point of view, they have real consequences for getting work done. A leader's mild anxiety can act as a signal that something needs more attention and careful thought. In fact, a sober mood can help immensely when considering a risky situation, and too much optimism can lead to ignoring dangers. A sudden flood of anger can rivet a leader's attention on an urgent problem, such as the revelation that a senior executive has engaged in sexual harassment, redirecting the leader's energies from the normal round of concerns toward finding a solution, such as improving the organization's efforts to eliminate harassment. While mild anxiety, such as over a looming deadline, can focus attention and energy, prolonged distress can sabotage a leader's relationships and also hamper work performance by diminishing the brain's ability to process information and respond effectively. A good laugh or an upbeat mood, on the other hand, more often enhances the neural abilities crucial for doing good work. Both good and bad moods tend to perpetuate themselves, in part because they skew perceptions and memories. When people feel upbeat, they see the positive light in a situation and recall the good things about it, and when they feel bad, they focus on the downside. Beyond this perceptual skew, the stew of stress hormones secreted when a person is upset takes hours to become reabsorbed in the body and fade away. That's why a sour relationship with a boss can leave a person a captive of that distress, with a mind preoccupied and a body unable to calm itself. "He got me so upset during that meeting, I couldn't go to sleep for hours last night." As a result, we naturally prefer being with people who are emotionally positive, in part because they make us feel good. Emotional hijacking. Negative emotions, especially chronic anger, anxiety, or a sense of futility, powerfully disrupt work, hijacking attention from the task at hand. For instance, in a Yale study of moods and their contagion, the performance of groups making executive decisions about how best to allocate yearly bonuses was measurably boosted by positive feelings and was impaired by negative ones. Significantly, the group members themselves did not realize the influence of their own moods. For instance, of all the interactions at an international hotel chain that pitched employees into bad moods, the most frequent was talking to someone in management. Interactions with bosses led to bad feelings, frustration, disappointment, anger, sadness, disgust, or hurt, about 9 out of 10 times. These interactions were the cause of distress more often than customers, work pressure, company policies, or personal problems. Not that leaders need to be overly nice. The emotional art of leadership includes pressing the reality of work demands without unduly upsetting people. One of the oldest laws in psychology holds that beyond a moderate level, increases in anxiety and worry erode mental abilities. Distress not only erodes mental abilities, but also makes people less emotionally intelligent. People who are upset have trouble reading emotions accurately in other people, decreasing the most basic skill needed for empathy and, as a result, impairing their social skills. Another consideration is that the emotions people feel while they work, according to new findings on job satisfaction, reflect most directly the true quality of work life. The percentage of time people feel positive emotions at work turns out to be one of the strongest predictors of satisfaction, and therefore, for instance, of how likely employees are to quit. In this sense, leaders who spread bad moods are simply bad for business, and those who pass along good moods help drive a business's success. Good moods, good work. When people feel good, they work at their best. Feeling good lubricates mental efficiency, making people better at understanding information and using decision rules in complex judgments, as well as more flexible in their thinking. Upbeat moods, research verifies, make people view others or events in a more positive light. That, in turn, helps people feel more optimistic about their ability to achieve a goal, enhances creativity and decision-making skills, and predisposes people to be helpful. Insurance agents with a glasses-half-full outlook, for instance, are far more able than their more pessimistic peers to persist despite rejections, and so they make more sales. Moreover, research on humor at work reveals that a well-timed joke or playful laughter can stimulate creativity, open lines of communication, enhance a sense of connection and trust, and, of course, make work more fun. Playful joking increases the likelihood of financial concessions during a negotiation. Small wonder that playfulness holds a prominent place in the toolkit of emotionally intelligent leaders. Good moods prove especially important when it comes to teams. The ability of a leader to pitch a group into an enthusiastic, cooperative mood can determine its success. On the other hand, whenever emotional conflicts in a group bleed attention and energy from their shared tasks, a group's performance will suffer. Consider the results of a study of 62 CEOs and their top management teams. The CEOs represented some of the Fortune 500, as well as leading U.S. service companies, such as consulting and accounting firms, not-for-profit organizations, and government agencies. The CEOs and their management team members were assessed on how upbeat, energetic, enthusiastic, determined they were. They were also asked how much conflict and tumult the top team experienced, that is, personality clashes, anger, and friction in meetings, and emotional conflicts, in contrast to disagreement about ideas. The study found that the more positive the overall moods of people in the top management team, the more cooperatively they worked together, and the better the company's business results. Put differently, the longer a company was run by a management team that did not get along, the poorer that company's market return. The group IQ, then, the sum total of every person's best talents contributed at full force, depends on the group's emotional intelligence, as shown in its harmony. This book is continued at this point on the other side of this cassette. Please reverse or turn the cassette over now.